I've never seen a better camera snapshot of the 5 seconds that we got with Kate Fahey. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's kind of abusing her leg with her paddle, actually hit one to the head, and then, had some choice words for the cameraman. Newsflash, Kate, the cameraman's going to be on you when you're playing on championship court.
I respect her wanting that camera off her
right now. No, I get it. I've been there before, too. So I love Kate Fahey.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right. It feels right. Legendary.
Absolutely.
Hot guys and IPAs. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good morning, Adam.
I'm glad you changed your voice for that.
Yeah. Oh, you have to.
You have to.
And it's a little dash of bronchitis. So don't.
Yeah. So
it makes me a little like manlier. You know, like
raspy in a good way.
It's raspy. It's deeper.
Right.
And yeah, I feel like more like a man with bronchitis. Maybe I'll just keep it.
Bronchitis, man. So let's chat for a second here, Rob. What's going on with you? So I don't even fully know. We've been out of the mix for a week or two here. I know you've had some issues and a surgery involved. Lay it on me. I want to hear.
Yeah. So I got back from, I've had a surgery scheduled for a while for February 20th. So that's kind of been for the entire year. That was kind of the target. God, is that a family dad? D-A-D? Man, like it's.
Look at that.
When you have a dad mug, you've arrived.
That's an arrival.
Dad mug with pictures, you've arrived.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So February 20th, surgery scheduled. Got back from India, I think on like the 11th or 12th from that trip, which we could talk about at a later date.
Okay.
There's a lot to recap around the international stuff. But so came back. And felt okay the first day or two. Went to Mayo the 13th for like all of my pre-op appointments and got cleared for surgery. And then literally the very next day, the 14th, it felt like the flu. I don't know what it was. I know a lot of people have been getting sick, but it felt miserable. I had a bad headache. I had a really terrible cough. Throat never actually hurt. Like it wasn't a sore throat, but just a deep, nasty, gnarly cough that I still have. And then even leading up to the day prior to surgery, the night of, I felt terrible, like cough. And you're not supposed to take any like cough medicine or ibuprofen or Tylenol. Well, you can take Tylenol, but you can't take a lot of stuff basically leading into the surgery. And I was taking everything. So day of, morning of, report time, 5:30. I'm like, guys, I've had a fever. I've had cough. And they're like, you're okay. We'll just go ahead with it anyways. And it was basically, I'm getting a colostomy done, or is what I got done, which is laparoscopic, which just means like robotic and small incision, so less invasive. So I've got three, basically holes, little incisions in my stomach on the right side. And then on the left side, I've got what you call a stoma, which is basically where they, it's a loop colostomy. The stoma is actually what the actual opening is. So basically it's diversion. So I have pretty severe perianal Crohn's disease. So every time I go to the bathroom essentially and have a bowel movement, it is very painful after, and it gets really inflamed, and there's just disease that just won't go away as long as that continues to happen. So the idea here is to give my bottom a rest and to divert bowel movements into like for my stomach. So it gives my bottom a rest to hopefully heal. And then hopefully reverse the procedure that I got done on the 20th. So went ahead with the surgery, like a lot emotionally going into it, a lot mentally, like big change of, you know, life, how I live, how I manage everything. And the stigma that kind of comes with it, like just for me internally, personally, But what I can say is I've lived the last 3 years in pretty gnarly, consistent pain that nobody really can have an insight into. It's just because I look like, you know, I'm playing pickleball. I mean, clearly not, I don't think, to my ability, because it's heavy fatigue. It's like, it's just a battle to even get on court. Like, I haven't practiced in the last year and a half because of it. You know, I'd go to tournaments, show up, and hope for the best, basically. So the beautiful part of it is that that pain that I've been dealing with in my bottom, even from having surgery, what is it, the 26 now, 6 days ago, has like lessened greatly. Like, I went, like, I'm about a half mile from the beach here, where I live with Malin, and I've never been able to do that walk from the condo to the beach without feeling like just incredibly uncomfortable with the pain. And I was able to do that like 4 days after surgery. I was just like, you know, I'm not supposed to like bend or twist or do anything with my core. I'm supposed to keep it very stable. But I was able to do that walk like for the first time without pain. I was like, holy, this is like incredibly promising. This is like a new, like, if I can maintain not having pain, I'll deal with the bag. I'll deal with, you know, whatever I have to deal with to just not feel the pain I've been feeling. So it's been so far so good. It's obviously a lot to manage, a lot to try to figure out mentally and physically and how to manage this thing and all of the stuff that entails. But to not have the pain is really, really, I can't even describe how unbelievable it is. Cause I remember being on a podcast in 2022, probably April. It was when it was Freestyle Boys and I had Casey Patterson as co-host. And I think it was by the dink then. And I remember like the first time I talked about it on a podcast of like, I don't know what's happening in my bottom, but this pain is crazy. I went to a general surgeon. They tried to cut into it. And dude, to fast forward 3 years later where it's, it's crazy to think that's 3 years of just kind of a like nagging, ongoing pain that hasn't really let up. To like, I forgot what it felt like to not feel that. So it's been really, really, really great the past few days, even though I'm dealing with a lot of pain from the surgery. But
yeah,
just to not have that pain that I've been dealing with, right, is really, really awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always think about the Jigsaw Health slogan, it's fun to feel good. And when you don't, like, you don't really realize it when you're feeling good, and then you don't feel good, whatever that may be. And
I want to do is feel good.
That's it. Yeah, it's it. It's like all encompassing. It totally takes over, you know, whether it's a stomach bug or something more serious and long, and that you've been dealing with, it's, you just want to feel good. And when you don't, it affects every aspect of life. So, it's nice to hear that you could, and at least early on are feeling much better after post-op. So that's great.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to do to the pickle career in terms of playing. And, I kind of like looked up athletes that have ostomies, and you don't see many professional athletes or athletes in general that play at a high level that have it. The doctors and nurses are like, yeah, there's pro surfers that have, I'm like, okay, you'll show me. Because I haven't found them.
Yeah, right.
So it's TBD on what playing looks like after this. But honestly, I'm just happy to not be in pain. So everything else is a bonus. If I can play at some level, I the one, I had therapy yesterday and I talked to, because this stuff throws you for a loop mentally, emotionally. And there's like, I would urge anybody out there that's going through any kind of life change to have somebody to talk to, especially as a guy, where it's a bit more of a stigma to talk to people about stuff that's going on in your life and just to open up about it. But I was just like, you know, pickleball has been so great to me because when I found it, I was really out of shape. I was unhealthy. I hadn't really done much physical activity in the last 10 years. I was much pudgier. I just wasn't living like a very healthy, good lifestyle in terms of physical activity. And the one thing I think about with all the health stuff is like, I just don't want to lose that. Like, that's been like the greatest gift with pickleball for me, is being able to be active and doing something that I actually enjoy being active and not having to go to the gym and just be on a treadmill or go out for a run. Like, that stuff's so like mind numbing to me. I like doing something. I like the mind aspect, the mental aspect, the strategy aspect of pickleball and like having to solve for something. So as long as I'm able to play, whether it's at the pro level, whether it's for fun, like as long as I'm able to be active and be involved with it, can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, well said. No, I agree with you. I think that that is one of the great things about pickleball is it does. I mean, it's clear that racket paddle sports help your mind. So of course, your body and the physical aspect of it, going jogging and doing things like that is not easy. So it really helps your life in so many ways. So I think that that's a common story. You were able to get to the pro level and it played well there. Not everyone could do that, but I think it's under that a lot of the real glory of the sport is. So I agree completely.
Okay, enough about me. Let's
no, I mean that's
let's talk.
I mean, it's important to bring that up and to talk about it and to share what you're going through. That's why we're here. So so I have a couple notes here, Rob, and there have been some MLP rule changes. Shocking.
Okay.
Shocking as it switches quite a bit. So
like rule as in format of playing changes or like league structure?
League structure. So okay. So basically we have gone to the 16 teams in Premier having 6 players on the roster. So what's happening now is what has switched is all teams will fill their 4 roster spots before any teams have a chance to draft number 5 and number 6. So, for instance, let's say the Chicago Slice, they do not have any players. They have nobody. So what they're able to do is everyone who needs a guy or 2 guys or girls, they get to fill out that 4 spots. So one of the better teams can't hoard talent in their 5 and 6 spot, and all of that talent will be in one of the top 4 spots for the teams. Okay.
Yeah.
And
that's
also,
huge. Yeah.
Also, another thing that has happened is there's a 10K minimum for a drafted player. That is what the cost of that player is. Now, there is an open auction, so it could go for any, a draft slot can go for any amount of money, but that 5 and 6 spot has moved down to $1,000 instead of $10,000. Okay. So, you know, having a cheaper player or having a player that's $0 coming from Challenger, that is still an advantage, but less of an advantage now that the 5 and 6 spots aren't going to cost a team 10K. They are only going to cost 1,000. So, pretty significant change that affects the draft in terms of roster composition, and so on. So those teams that are coming from Challenger or teams like the New York Hustlers that drop their own team actually get a big bump as they are able to fill out those 4 spots. And a lot of the more established teams, say the Dallas Flash, St. Louis Shock, that are keeping 3 of their 4 players. Of course, you must throw one back in. The most you can keep is 3. They only have 1 slot to fill. So that helps the teams that have multiple roster spots to fill. So that is an important factor, and that has changed somewhat recently. Don't know the politics on that or exactly what happened to make that a rule, but that is where we stand right now.
Selkirk Cork Strike, lightweight, breathable,
seamless. So
what I do like is the all one color. It's a nice style.
Yeah, it looks good.
These are available.
Rob, 6-month sole guarantee too, which is super important for me because I'm an explosive athlete and a high-end mover, world-class foot speed and footwork. So sometimes I just blow through the soles. I like to tie my shoes really tight, and sometimes I get the loop of the tie and I slide on that and it rips, and I hate it when that happens. Seems to be my left big toe area, just sole gone. So to have that for 6 months is something that I need.
So this is an advantage to call it like the Hustlers, who the teams that dropped a lot of players or the teams that lost a lot of players like the Slice. What do you find What do you find to be the most like interesting storyline with these rule changes?
I think it's basically what I already described. It is some throwing of a bone to the challenger teams coming up that aren't keeping their whole roster. You know, it's like, cause you know, a lot of other sports, I remember NFL back in the day, the expansion draft, if they were adding teams. So these challenger teams are coming in and, you know, it's with a much different roster than some of the more established premier teams. So granted, some of those teams are keeping two or three players. But the ones that have two or below, they get some form of value thrown their way so that there can be more parity and they can compete better in the league, which is important. So there is.
But do you think that's fair in terms of like the Hustlers, for example? It looked like they just absolute tanked, right? They it was a complete organization overhaul with the NML guys also getting dropped, all the players getting dropped. And now it feels like, you know, they're almost rewarded for just doing a complete tank.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think that they knew that or were doing that tank job as if the new rules were in play. I think it is something that has recently happened, whatever, among the owners or the rules or the competition committee or what exactly they have going on behind the scenes. But yeah, it does work in their favor that they decided to do that. And that was... it was clearly an organizational decision to gather some funding through trades and sponsorships and kind of get that operating capital and then just roll with it, whatever may happen. Yeah, I noticed. I didn't see NML anywhere for quite a while as they were helping out, and I've seen a couple articles pop off the last week or two from those guys. So they were
good to have them back. They were always fun to read.
Yeah, they were going hard there for a while, and then just crickets, similar to the Josh Gartman situation that was posting aggressively on Twitter.
Prediction. Yeah. Eric Tice is going to be the next one to go dark.
Yeah, Eric Tice is going to go dark.
Don't take Eric from us, guys. Yeah, don't do it. That guy's
deep in the game, and I respect him for it. But that's something that's happening, and that's the way the Hustlers went, and now we get some more articles from NML. It's a tough break for them that myself and Corinne aren't playing, so they can't bash us anymore. They love to just destroy old crusty veterans, which pretty much sums up myself the last year or two of playing. So, but I agree, they're detail oriented in their articles. They seem to have a reasonable thought process about it. Of course, I don't agree with everything they say, but every now and then I read a snippet and I'm like, that's pretty accurate. So, that's where we are in terms of Major League Pickleball. We have the draft this upcoming Saturday. So it's only a couple days.
Wow. Okay.
Only a couple days away. And man, it's going to be very dynamic.
Is it going to be live or streamed or public or no?
It's a great question. I should know that. I do believe that it will be. There'll be at least some form of coverage of the draft as the picks are happening. I don't know if it's going to be live video or not, or like a more of a blog, just article situation, but it will be updated in real time, and it's going to be very interesting. There are haves and have nots with the setup, and how hard is everyone going to go? There's like three or four ladies that are going to be extremely value, much deeper male player pool. Are the big time guys going to go for, you know, 100,000+, maybe more? Are teams going to pull back and not want to spend, and you can find someone legit for, you know, a cheap price? I have no idea. You have to read the room and the auction drafts. Very, very difficult to prepare for exactly what's going to happen. So it should be a shit show in a good way during the draft.
Do you have a sense of, and we can all get a sense of it based on kind of what happened during the drop period, but just for the listeners out there, who are the teams and the owners and the GMs that like are incredibly motivated in MLP in terms of winning, not just brand building, not just, you know, being in the league? And who are some of the teams that seem to be less motivated by winning and not really as engaged as maybe they were in the past.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that comes down to my boy, Tim Parks. So, he was as deep in the game as anybody, and he has had his spirit broken a little bit by putting in a lot of work through the merger and then some of this process. And of course, getting a new job that I hope is going very well for him. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. So, he's putting in more hours there, less hours and pickleball. So I think it's in flux and it fluctuates.
Probably good for his wallet.
Yeah. Probably good for that and his mental load that he's thinking about.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, it's pretty clear. You have the Columbus Sliders going for it, sending a lot of money to get, CJ Klinger and Andre Daescu, who has been just playing phenomenal ball lately. And, you know, so a couple more that come to mind, DC pickleball team. You've got the Orlando Squeeze. You have the St. Louis Shock. Those are all teams with quality rosters and that have, you know, maybe not got sloppy with the spending, but have been willing to throw out some money to make sure that their roster is adequate and more. So,
do we have a Yankees that just is willing to spend anything?
I wouldn't say that is necessarily true. Maybe I have a better answer for you after Saturday. So I think it's more of a grouping of teams that are willing to do what they need to do. And there's been, you know, some teams that have always been kind of budget and are looking to be frugal and, you know, find value as opposed to, you know, just throw in some money and making sure they have a cornerstone player or two or three if you're the St. Louis Shock, which is really nice. It's nice to have Hayden Patrick and Gabe Tardio and Anna Bright on your squad to start. So, it's an interesting league, and I still wait for there to be any period of time where the rules settle without switching or changing or something drastic happening to the league, and we will get there at one point, but not there yet.
You mentioned the Shock and the three they have. You failed to mention the player they dropped, who has come to become my favorite player in pickleball based off this past weekend, and not even based off of any, you know, shot making ability, just based off pure demeanor.
I've never seen
a better camera snapshot of the 5 seconds that we got with Kate Fahey. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's kind of abusing her leg with her paddle, actually hit one to the head, and then you know, had some choice words for the cameraman who newsflash, Kate, the cameraman's gonna be on you when you're playing on championship court.
But I respect her wanting that camera off her now.
No, I get it. I've been there before, too. So I love Kate Fahey. I think she's fantastic.
That stare into the camera, dude, it reminded me of, like, I don't know if you remember the little ginger kid in the stands. I don't remember what game it was, but he was just, like, looking at the camera and just, like...
side-eye. Yeah, like, side-eye with anger.
I hope Josh knows what I'm talking about, producer Josh, and can find that clip so we can actually overlay it on the YouTube video. Because if we can't, I'll just look like a dumbass now.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Let's find it.
No, like, I said, that's fine. You looking like a dumbass.
No, It happens a lot.
Yeah, right. But, like, I like the players that have a switch that flips.
Yeah,
like,
same.
I have had interactions with Kate Fahey. It's not like we're super tight or anything.
Yeah.
But she is lovely. I mean, I've had great interactions with her before the tournament starts, like, in between matches, all this or that. And then she gets on court, and it's, you know, it's a little bit of a crazy lady going on. And I think that that's great. And you see it possibly a more mild version with Anna Bright. Kind of gets that laser focus.
Fantastic clip of her too.
Let's
be honest.
No, it's great. So I love the intensity, and I love players that wear their emotions on their sleeve, positive and negative. That's what it's all about. And I, you know, being in their shoes in previous years, like I understand the ups and downs that come with playing pickleball, and now the stakes are much higher. So it's like exacerbated even more now than when I was playing. So it's fun for me as a commentator and a fan of professional pickleball to see these personalities come out and
they come out in a big way sometimes.
It's huge. It's huge for viewership.
Yeah, I agree completely. So it's great.
You know what else is huge for viewership, Adam? People listening to your sweet, sweet voice as you commentate and just giving the most in-depth insights into the game of pro pickleball.
Well, I appreciate that.
One high-end luxury premium content creator could do.
Yeah. Well, thank you. There's ups and downs in the booth, just like there is on the court. Sometimes I call a match. It's my A game. Sometimes it's my C minus game. There you go. Keep going. So that's part of the deal. But I think that one thing that you can say about myself and Dave Fleming is we really are fans. We really love what's going on. We love to be the person that gets to describe how talented the players on court to a general audience. And I don't take that for granted at all. So it's a joy.
Do you remember Kenny Mayne?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Dude, he was my absolute favorite SportsCenter host. I don't know why that just popped in my head, but Kenny Mayne. If you guys don't know Kenny Mayne, look him up. Adam, I also saw, sorry, my brain is just...
What happened to him? Like, he was like on it, and then he was, seemed like he was doing like side hustle or lower key stuff after a period of time. I don't know what happened.
I don't either, but he was my all-time SportsCenter guy growing up when I would just, you know, get a brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart and go sit on the couch in the morning and watch SportsCenter. You know, that summers like that as a kid were nothing better in the 90s, you know?
God, like, I remember, like, being in the dorm room. We had these four-person dorm rooms, like, ESPN just on all day long. It's not like that anymore.
All day, dude.
Like, it was like the glory time of SportsCenter, and, you know, we're... Yep. It's like, TV isn't a thing anymore. It's like streaming and stuff, it's iPad,
It'd
whatever.
Be the same episode playing from, you know, 7 a.m. to noon, and I'd have the whole SportsCenter episode memorized, basically.
Correct. Absolutely right. It was a different time, Rob. Really was.
Different time. Really better, was. Simpler times, Adam.
Yep. Simpler time. Simple is not worse.
Simple is simple. Simple is easy. Simple is quiet. Simple is...
What do they get? Rob, what do they have you on? Are you on pills right now, Rob?
I'm on coffee.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Gotcha. Okay, what else do we have here? Oh, I wanted to mention also, the Major League Pickleball has changed the waiver situation. So now that we have the 6 roster spots, there's going to be multiple waiver wire transaction periods after tournaments. So what you can do is you can steal a 5th and 6th player on another team if you give up one of your top 4. So you will, there'll be a time where you establish, this is my top 4. These are my 2 bench players. And once that's established, teams have the ability to take one of those 5-6 players and put them into their top 4 as long as they give up one of their top 4, which is a big deal. That is a big factor in terms of waiver. I mean, the talent levels change so quick. Some guy is a okay player and 2 months later, he's in the mix. Same thing for the ladies. So, that is another big factor to kind of help with the parity and the ability to, you know, have more, competitive matches, even though almost all of the big sports, you know, there's some cellar dwellers and there's some heavy hitters, and that's kind of, how it goes, especially when you have a lot of teams in your league. So, it's good rule changes. Oh, excuse me, Robert. Another rule change to talk about at the PPA. And Mesa, which was probably the best crowd I've ever seen in terms of pickleball. So invested, a very long competitive championship Sunday is.
They gotta fix that court, man.
There was, what do you mean?
That court, that center court, that championship court.
Like in terms of what? Oh man, there's about 90 minutes. 90 minutes.
You know those? You know when you're at like a really nice hotel and like you're laying in bed, and then there's like you reach over and there's like a button on the wall. That has an arrow pointing up and an arrow pointing down. And, you know, let's call it 9:32 PM. And you're getting to bed early at a reasonable hour. So you can wake up early and hit the gym. And then you see like the bright city lights. They're nice. They're beautiful. They're pretty. You're on the 22nd floor and you want to see that, but you also want complete darkness so you can sleep and wake up for the gym. And all you have to do, Adam, you don't have to get up out of bed. You don't have to walk over and do the little pull system by hand like a manual laborer. All you have to do is reach over, press the down button, and the blackout shades just come down. I think this is what we need at Center Court at AAG in Mesa, Arizona.
There you go. Arizona Athletic Grounds. You heard it from Rob Henry.
I hear it's pretty cheap to install that. So, and I've heard they're pretty, you know, I'm not going to do a bankruptcy joke because, you know, they've been to bankruptcy a couple times. But
yeah,
it might not be the smartest spin right now, but it sure would help Adam.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like I said, there's about 90 minutes where it's very difficult, and it's not, you know, like one half of the court is light, one is dark. It's like it goes in and out of light four or five times,
yeah,
the ball.
Really
and,
tough.
I mean,
really
you
tough.
Got whatever. You got damn Gabe Tardio driving at you. I mean, that's... It's difficult to see that ball, especially when it's traveling in and out of the shadow. So I agree with that.
And you saw more missed fourth volleys than you'd typically see out of any of the top players, right? So it's like, and that's not due to, you know, the drives being that much better all of a sudden this weekend versus other weekends. It's due to lack of visibility,
right?
Which has always been my issue. With playing outside, it's like you don't have as clean of pickleball as you would inside, where you don't have those issues and those variables.
No, I'm with you. And I've been playing some indoor pickleball up here in North Carolina. A couple of facilities have popped up within.
You gone to that golf place?
In
that golf
my
slash
bubble.
Pickle place?
The Pinpoint. I have been there. It's legit.
Is it dope?
It's huge. I mean, massive.
Dude,
they got multiple bars, lots of courts. They have those golf simulator things. So I have not played the golf there, but it's pretty solid.
They have like
they
have like a putting green too, right? It's not just simulators. They have like a little pitch putt type deal.
Yeah. Multiple bars.
Have you, Adam? Yeah. Just to be clear, if anybody missed that, have you watched any of the, or you or Corinne watched any of the TGL?
No.
The new golf league that's like, it's like in a SoFi Arena custom built for it. So these guys are driving, it's team format, similar to MLP, right? Where you have, you know, the Atlanta team versus yada, yada. A lot of parallels, actually, because they're not really obviously based geographically there, but they, you know, have city ownership, basically. You have the Atlanta team playing the Jupiter team in Florida. But they drive and I think hit from, you know, call it 50 yards out on a simulator, a gigantic simulator, like probably the world's biggest, I think. And then they have like a rotating green and
rotating,
undulating, where they can change the, maybe
undulating.
It's a big word. Sure. But they can change kind of the vortex context.
Oh man. Okay.
Convex. What was it, Josh?
Contour.
Is that right? That's like makeup, no?
Contour is makeup?
Right? I think contouring is makeup. Okay, so you can change the contour
makeup?
Of the green. Thank you, Josh. This is compact?
It's
I don't
makeup.
Know. But you can change the wavies of the green as well as the obviously pin placement. But it also has a trap, has bunkers, sand. Just real kind of like a cool concept. They're all mic'd just to make it more like
mic'd is good.
Friendly. Mic'd is huge, especially with like these PGA guys that you want personality from. I've got two things to finish with. There's a new Full Swing out. I haven't watched any of it, but excited to watch it because I think it showed Rory's meltdown, or you know, when he blew the
meltdowns are good.
Yeah, always. But anyways, TGL, I haven't. Point is, I just wanted to know if you'd watch it, but I haven't been fully hooked into it yet, but I found it to be interesting to watch, and I'd probably watch it again if it was on TV. But I think that's like, I think pickleball and MLP specifically can take a lot of lessons from what they're doing with TGL. I think mics are still a really big deal, and especially for viewership, like it's not solved. I know, you know, we've got all these stats of how many people bought tickets, yada, yada. Different watching in person. It's like, I think once you watch in person, it changes how you see pro pickleball, and then would, I think, lend itself to watching online or on TV. But to get the viewership we need online and on TV, I think we still have to go mic'd. And I know it's uncomfortable. I know players don't necessarily like it. But there's different ways to do it now, right? You can clip it on the hat. You can do whatever. You can do different things. So I think mic's still really important. Other random side note, Adam, and I'll let you follow up on this to close us out. There's a new fun documentary we watched last night, Mullen and I, on, I think, HBO Max. And it was the tagline was the greatest upset you've never heard of. Do you know what it is?
No.
Okay.
I do not.
So 1992, well, let's go back to 1988, Adam. USA basketball lost in the semifinals. At that time, it was just college players. And the FIBA, after the 88 Olympics, well, US was pissed, right? They got bronze, I think, in men's basketball, which should never happen. They lost to the USSR in the semis. Fast forward to 1992, professional players are allowed to play. So you have the pro team, which is like it's Bird, it's Magic, it's Jordan, it's Karl Malone, John Stockton, David Robinson, just like Charles Barkley, just 11 Hall of Famers on that USA men's basketball team. Just absurd. And then you had the guys who were supposed to be playing in the Olympics that year, because that's what everybody looked forward to, right? The college guys were like, okay, we can go win a gold medal. And now they're kind of relegated to being the select team, quote unquote, and who basically get invited out to training camp. They get to practice. But the story is that this the select team, which is Bobby Hurley, Chris Webber, Jamal Mashburn, who else was there? Allen Houston, I believe. Just like
good team.
Incredible team. Bobby Hurley, dude, I loved him growing up. Whether you like Duke or UNC, I just loved watching Bobby Hurley. He's 5 foot nothing and just so fast and quick off the dribble. But the greatest upset you've never heard of is that select team beating the dream team in a scrimmage in practice, 62-54. And there's still like a lot of controversy around it, but it was cool. You had quotes from, you know, Bird was in it. They had old footage. They actually recorded the whole scrimmage. There's no pictures. They made the coach, Chuck Daly of the U.S. men's basketball team, made them like take the score down right before media came in. But very, very good documentary. I know you're a big documentary guy, so you got to check that out.
And I like that era of basketball. I don't really watch anymore, but it was a great era. So I will check that out. No, that's a good one. Absolutely.
Sorry, that was a really random tangent.
No, that's what you do, Rob. I would expect nothing less out of you. So, I would absolutely watch that. Jamal Mashburn, Chris Webber, Allen Houston. It's a legit select team. Not so bad for the youngsters.
Do you remember Rodney Rogers?
Yeah, of course I do. Left-hander. Yeah.
Played a long time in the league. 3 years after retirement, got into a dirt bike accident. And paralyzed.
Oh,
so
geez.
Paralyzed to the day.
Oh,
so he was in it speaking from a tube. Heartbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. I didn't even realize that happened.
Let's just finish this episode on an uplifting note.
You go.
Sorry, Rodney. My bad, Rodney. That's a tough break. I did not know that about you.
Yeah,
that's no good. Dirt biking, my gosh.
Don't get off two wheels, everybody.
Okay, Rob.
Two wheels and a motor, get off.
Yeah. Last thing before we end the episode is there was a very brief at the PPA Mesa Cup targeting rule that came up for about a day or two. I don't really know anything about it. I didn't know leading in. I was told the day of commentary that there's a new rule that we are experimenting with, possibly targeting above the shoulders with intent, a lot of gray area for the referees to sift through. And then whatever, 48 hours later, we didn't hear much about that rule any longer. So it looks like that trial period of the targeting rule is not going to carry over to other tournaments. And I did say in the moment on air that I think that I like it. And I'm not sure I was ever fully on board with it. I just don't know how you enforce it. I think it's part of the game. A lot of people wearing eye protection now. Really, the only thing that a wiffle ball can do to you is eye-related. You're in a pro tournament. You are.
I don't know. Jesse Irvin got a concussion. Allegedly,
she did get.
Beer City Open.
I was there. Allegedly, yeah, I remember that.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I don't have any reason to go against what the medical professionals say or what Jesse Irvin said. So that's part of it. Yeah. So that was a brief blip. I think it's just too tough to enforce. And I think that it's probably good if that stays away. And if it comes back, I will be the one to say that I'm just not so sure that I think that that is the right move. So those were,
I think,
rule discussions.
Absolutely right. Just so hard to enforce, right, Adam? And think with how many people like go down to Scorpion now too. It's like, you know, somebody could be winding up and they could be going down to Scorpion,
right,
and then they hit the ball, you know, 6 inches over the net and it hits them in the head because they drop their body, right?
Right.
It doesn't mean that there's targeting in the head, even though they hit him in the head.
There's a lot to sift through for the referees.
Yeah.
And really the only situation that it kind of popped up this weekend was Hayden Patrick went to Wyatt Stone, and Wyatt Stone knew something was coming. So he kind of hopped. So like changing your body position, and it's there is a lot to unpack with enforcing that rule. So I hope that I hope it stays away, and we will just have to see. You don't want anyone to get hurt, but I just don't see how there's an avenue to properly enforce that rule. So
Josh is going to get mad, but because we told him we'd keep it less than what we're at already. But last thing, Adam, I know we've talked about it before, but hot damn, Annalie's competitive spirit, just unreal, dude. Just down a game in 9-4 and just starts high-fiving the crowd, gets the crowd behind her. Just such a veteran move just to, you know, not only start getting the momentum, but to get the crowd behind you too when you're the number one player in the world and haven't lost in however long. And like, that's hard to actually get the crowd behind you when you're expected to win all the time. The crowd wants the underdog. But, dude, just the fight and the resiliency is just unbelievable. And
18-year-old veteran.
It was really impressive to see, and big props to her on another women's singles gold.
No, like, as
big props to Brooke on, I thought she had her dead in the water, and she was playing lights out, and
I mean,
not much you can do.
Championship Sunday was one game away from the maximum. That's
crazy.
Parity.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
All three doubles, five, one of the two singles went three. So that is wild. The crowd was just so into it. Big eruptions. And
what we've been asking for a long time.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
is having match up, having the parity
awesome
that we have.
The girlies played great to force a game five. Big D Deckel Bar got in some mixed action, and then the fellas final was electric as well, with two games going to Benintardio, or excuse me, Alshon and Daescu, two games of Benintardio, and then a tight game five. I mean, that's what you want. So
Ben didn't like losing to Deckel, I'll tell you that.
No, he hates it. And I think that that's a funny statement. I even bring it up on the broadcast. It's like you don't want to lose to randoms, but you don't want to lose to your boys either. So I think it's different for everybody. But he's not a fan of losing to Deckel. And he did. So that was good, though. That was good. I think we're going to, since we had that little hiatus, I think we are going to try to record something in the next couple of days to put a couple episodes out, as opposed to just the once a week. So stay tuned for that, everyone. And we might have a treat for you in that next episode. Night night, everyone. 40 minutes, that's not bad. We knocked it out, brother. Until next time.
Later.